Blog Talk Radio.
If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right. Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
I am the voice of the voiceless.
Okay, I believe we're finally on the air here. Let me double check here. I think we're on the air. So, as such, hello everybody. This is Liberty's Voice with your host, Matty B. Matt Boland. Not getting... What's going on here? Okay, I think you people can hear me now, I hope. But, hello everybody. This is 1650 AM, Radio Free Connecticut. On the air right now, 5:48 p.m., and this is Liberty's Voice with Matt Boland. I am your host, Matty B., Matt Boland, and this is pretty much a special report edition of Liberty's Voice, right here on 1650 a.m., Radio Free Connecticut in the Bridgeport, Stratford, Connecticut. So if you're listening out there on 1650, then welcome and thanks for listening. I'm trying to play a sound here. Let me see if I can find it. Did it download? I guess it didn't. Should have. Huh. But, I'll play this instead. Big news today, well, last night, actually. Late last night, out of Cuba, the dictator of Cuba, Fidel Castro, is dead at the age of 90. And so that's what we're talking about here tonight. We'll talk about his death and what it means for Cuba. Some reaction from world leaders. And we'll talk about the future for Cuba and what might happen. The call-in number here is 646-668-8944. That's 646-668-8944. And I just want to put down, as you hear me typing here, that we are on air here at 1650 AM Radio Free Connecticut. Started a little late due to technical difficulties. I'm sorry about that. Let's see if I can find some friends here. Yeah, I'm also on Facebook, 1650 AM Radio Free Connecticut, of course. And so let's talk a little bit about the biography of Fidel Castro. Let me run down with you a little about his life. He was born August 13th, 1926, in the town of Biran, Cuba. And early on in his life, in the 50s, he opposed the American-backed president of Cuba, Fulgencio Batista. It was an armed revolution there. On July 26, 1953, Castro and a group of guerrillas supporting him attacked the Moncada Barracks. That's a Cuban military base. A military garrison there. And the revolt was put down quickly by the Cuban army. And Also, and when that revolt was put down, Castro, Fidel Castro, and other rebel leaders were imprisoned soon after. Under an amnesty deal in 1955, Castro and his supporters were released. That brings us to November 25th, 1956. Fidel Castro set sail upon the ship Granma with 81 armed men. See, he was trying another revolt against the American-backed Batista. And this time it worked. On December 31st, 1958, leading up to New Year's Day, 1959, Fulgencio Batista of Cuba was forced into exile, and Castro gained power as prime minister. And then we come up to April 17th, 1961. It was the beginning of the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba. About 1,400 Cuban exiles with backing from the CIA attacked Cuban forces at the Bay of Pigs. I think the Hispanics call it Bahia de Cochinos or something. Or something like that. But there was no American air support for the invasion, as the U.S. wanted to avoid the appearance of big-time involvement in Cuba. And as such, the attack failed because there was pretty much no air support for the exiles. And after the failure of the invasion, many exiles were that attacked with that group of 1,400 were imprisoned and or executed. And soon afterwards, Fidel Castro declaring that he is a socialist. There's your socialist revolution, people. And I think I have a sound for that.
Better get a bucket, I'm gonna throw up.
So, Castro declaring that he is a socialist, and in 1962, mid-1962 or so, he agreed to the installation of Soviet nuclear missiles in Cuba, and that precipitated, started the Cuban Missile Crisis. It officially began on October 22nd, 1962, President John F. Kennedy announced American discovery of these Soviet nuclear missiles in a national address to the American people. And for about 7 days, the world was on the brink of nuclear war. It could have happened at any time because we had a blockade going against ships trying to make their way to Cuba and support the regime there and support the construction of the nuclear missiles. And that's probably the closest that we've ever come to nuclear war, at least in North America. It could have gone down right then. And I actually have seen that unless a few brave men from both Russia and Cuba had pretty much they objected to launching nuclear missiles, and we came very, very close to nuclear war. But the crisis would officially last until October 28th of that year, 1962, when Nikita Khrushchev, the premier of the Soviet Union, agreed to remove the Soviet nuclear weapons from Cuba in exchange for the U.S. removing a missile base in Turkey. We had Jupiter missiles, Jupiter nuclear-capable missiles, over in Turkey. And President Kennedy accepted that deal, of course. And if you're in the area, or if you're, even if you're not in the area, on Blog Talk Radio tonight, Liberty's Voice with Matt Bolin, I want to talk about, and I want to hear from you, your memories of Fidel Castro and the Cuban regime under him. And if you have any memories of the Cuban Missile Crisis, I'd also like to hear that. And so the call-in number here at Liberty's Voice is 646-668-8944. That's 646-668-8944. And we've got about maybe 15 minutes left in the show. I think a little later, after the show, we will be doing some music here on Radio Free Connecticut. Take about a half hour, hour break after the show. And get some music on the air. But we're talking about the death of former Cuban leader Fidel Castro. And my friend William on Facebook says, good riddance to that communist. If you agree, disagree, if you're neutral, love to hear from you. 646-668-8944. 646-668-8944. And as I was saying, the Cuban Missile Crisis was quite a thing in itself, quite a historical moment, because except for the objections of a couple of brave men, we might have gone to nuclear war. It might have hit the fan, so to speak. That wouldn't have been good for anybody, of course. And let me just tell you a quick story about the Cuban Missile Crisis that I've heard from my mother. Of course, I wasn't alive back then. 1981 was when I was born. But my mother, of course, lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis. And she tells me sometimes about how things were going here in the southwestern Connecticut area. She has told me that at her school, at her elementary school, which was a Catholic school, of course, no problem with that, but at her school, she remembers nuclear bomb drills. Being ducking and covering in the halls, ducking and covering under their desks in classrooms. And it was a scary time. And my late uncle, his name was Jerry, apparently. This was what he apparently did. He was in the service at that time. I believe he was in the Navy or the Air Force. I think the Air Force. But at that time, he was just getting out of the service. And the deal was, he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to get out of the service at that time, because he thought if trouble started, he might be deployed to Cuba as part of the Air Force or Navy or operations in Cuba. So it was very scary for a lot of families, including mine, here in southwestern Connecticut. And I can't imagine what it was like in South Florida. must have been incredibly scary. It was a tough time, but America has been through tough times, and she survived. So, just a little recollection of the Cuban Missile Crisis there, and there's a lot of good historical photographs and historical recordings, interviews and such about the Cuban Missile Crisis, documentaries and all that. And even some recollections of how it went down here in southwestern Connecticut. I know that in my hometown of Fairfield, there used to be an actual Nike missile base. The Nike missiles were part of our nuclear, I mean, they were part of our arsenal and defense against the Soviet nuclear missiles. And right in my hometown of Fairfield, Connecticut, there used to be a Nike missile base that was active during that time period. And it was charged with the defense of southwestern Connecticut in the Bridgeport area. And there were fallout shelters and everything else. Duck and cover. Bert the Turtle. Duck and cover. I'll have to post that on my page sometime. I don't think anybody knows what that is around here, but it was a little cartoon. You won't get hurt if you duck and cover, pretty much. And we have about 10 minutes left. We're on the air here, 1650 AM, Radio Free Connecticut. And, of course, also on Blog Talk Radio and on Facebook, 1650 AM, Radio Free Connecticut. Of course. And we are talking about the death of Fidel Castro. And now that I've shared some memories, some recollections of my elders on the Cuban Missile Crisis, let's talk about other things that Castro did in his life. Well, in later years, he befriended the big-time dictator in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, and they were both very anti-American. 1992, Castro reached an agreement with American President Bill Clinton over Cuban refugees. And in 2006, well, that's when he started to not be so well in terms of illness. He underwent, Fidel Castro did, intestinal surgery in 2006 to repair some intestinal bleeding. And at that point, he passed presidential duties off to his brother, Raul Castro, who is the president of Cuba at this point. In 2008, Fidel Castro officially resigned as president of Cuba. And, of course, if you haven't heard the news, and I think everybody, well, most everybody has probably heard the news by now, unless you live in a cave somewhere.
Dummy! Yeah!
November 25th, 2016, Dateline Havana, Cuba. But the dictator of Cuba, Fidel Alejandro Castro, has died at the age of 90 from natural causes. The official time of death announced on Cuban state TV by his brother, President Raul Castro, was 10:29 p.m. Eastern Time on just yesterday, the night of November 25th, 2016. And 9 days of mourning have been announced in Cuba. And if you have seen some of the pictures from Cuba, is pretty much deserted in the Havana streets. There's no one out there either walking around or celebrating. There's nothing going on at all in the streets of Havana. And contrast that with the reaction of Cuban Americans in South Florida, particularly Miami. They've been pouring into the streets in celebration out in, down in Miami and the rest of South Florida. Some of the remarks from Cuban Americans there. Well, some remarks they said, I've waited all my life for this moment. And my parents were oppressed by Fidel Castro and didn't get to see this moment. But now I'm seeing it and I'm celebrating. Because Fidel Castro is dead. Some other remarks from Cuban Americans down in Florida. Well, apparently they were wearing shirts saying, "The day will come," in recent years. And now they say, "Our day has come." And among other comments is pretty much the chant, Fidel Castro was a traitor. Take your brother with you. They say Fidel's in hell and he should take Raul with him. The Cuban Americans down in Florida. And I do, well, I don't want to say I totally agree with that, but I understand the sentiments of Cuban Americans right now. Many, many Cubans were not just oppressed by the Fidel Castro regime, but also any kind of criticism of the regime was censored and still is. You might remember a few years ago in the late 90s, actually, a group called Brothers to the Rescue tried to drop some pamphlets and stuff over Cuba saying, "Resist Fidel Castro." And for their trouble, their planes were shot at and shot down by Cuban forces, and four, maybe five of them, of the men flying the planes, died because of that attack on their planes. So there was no kind of dissent at all allowed in Cuba from the Fidel Castro regime. You could not criticize him. You could not say anything remotely disrespectful of him. And even now, if you are to say, if you're in Cuba and you are to say, "Well, Fidel was a traitor and a dictator," or something like that, you'd be arrested. You can't do that there. And that's, and part of what I usually say about our freedom of speech is we have many men and women who have given their lives for the right of freedom of speech here in the United States, and they should always be respected and honored, in my opinion. But the Cubans down there are like, "Hey, take your brother Raul to hell with you, Fidel." And I definitely understand that sentiment. Because, like I was saying, Fidel and now his brother Raul have terribly oppressed Cubans and Cuban exiles that were in Cuba but left. There were two big waves of pretty much if this is a word, exoduses from Cuba of dissidents and others who just couldn't take it anymore. But other dissidents and everything were rounded up, they were imprisoned, and many of them actually executed. They went to their death at the hands of Fidel Castro. So I understand the sentiments very much, and the raw emotion of Cuban Americans at this hour, who are saying, our day has come, Fidel, take your brother Raul to hell with you. And as I have seen, or you have probably seen, I hope, of the celebrations in South Florida, and even in places like New Jersey, people are pouring into the streets, Cuban Americans pouring into the streets, in celebration of Fidel Castro's death, because to them, he was a tyrant and a dictator. And I agree with that, in fact. He was a terrible tyrant, a terrible dictator. Many lost their freedom, their property, and their very lives at his hands. So, as my friend William says, William Russell, on my page here, good riddance to a communist dictator. We have about 60 seconds left in the show. If you've been listening on 1650 AM or on Blog Talk Radio, thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We will be back in about maybe an hour and a half, and we'll be doing some music here on 1650 AM Radio Free Connecticut, maybe also online. So join us then for music and more good times here on Radio Free Connecticut. This has been Liberty's Voice with Matt Boland. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again in a few days. Thanks for listening, people. See you later.
If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
I am the voice of the voiceless.